With KWBU News in Waco, I'm Ryland Barton. This month we're taking a look at poverty in Waco. About 30% of Wacoans live below the poverty line. That's about double the state's poverty rate. And one of the biggest ways that poverty affects the lives of Wacoans is food insecurity. This week I talk with Buddy Edwards, the executive director of Caritas in Waco, and Shamithia Webb, the regional director of the Texas Hunger Initiative, a nonprofit based at Baylor that addresses hunger issues across the state. I'm here with Shamithia Webb, the Waco regional director of Texas Hunger Initiative, and Buddy Edwards, the executive director of Caritas in Waco, and we're talking about hunger and food insecurity in Waco. Thanks a lot for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
No problem.
To start off, about 18% of Texas households are classified as food insecure. That was from 2012. So, Shamithia, you were talking to me a little bit earlier about how that number you don't feel like is exactly right for characterizing food insecurity itself. Can you talk a little bit about what you think it means to be food insecure?
So I think food insecurity, we should emphasize that the second part of that word a little bit more, which is the insecure part. And so it's typically an anxiety about being able to put food on the table. And so the reason the food insecurity percentage is important, but you have a lot of people who may not be considered food insecure by the numbers, but they still struggle paycheck to paycheck. They're still worried about how they're going to access food. And what you see a lot of instances is there's a compromise in either the quality or the quantity of food that you get it. So, and I can give you an example if that's fine. So, you know, growing up, we struggled a lot too. But like the typical sandwich in the neighborhood I grew up in, and you may think, okay, ham, tuna, something like that. It was actually a French fry sandwich. And that's just because at the time you can get a bag of French fries, 3 bags for $1. You can get some white bread at the time for 59 cents. So you could, $2, you can get a meal that could last for a week or so. And so that's food insecurity. It's like you have access to food, but it's not the most nutritionally sound food. Mm-hmm. Just carbs on top of carbs in a lot of instances. Not going to get you full as well. So that's why you got to kind of tease out more than just that statistic to get a picture of what food insecurity is.
Sure. If you can go into that a little bit more, the people who... You know, people who are food insecure, who are kind of on a limited budget, where are they turning to get food?
I think you turn to the person that's sitting to my right here, Buddy Edwards, in Caritas Food Pantry. We know a lot of folks frequent them or other food pantries in the community. And then I think there's just you start pooling resources. So, you know, maybe you have some food that another person doesn't. So we hear about food exchange that happens in certain communities, too. Or you just go without. So you're relying on these emergency food resources? You pull in resources, or you're going without? That's what I've been seeing for a long time.
Yeah, and I think she's definitely correct. And we see this not only at Caritas, but there are other food pantries, of course, in our community. And all of them, I think, are impacted greatly by the volume of people coming to them who are in need of emergency or supplemental food assistance. And these numbers have definitely not gone down in the last years or so. And I was remarking earlier that for Caritas, our numbers have actually increased from 2013, almost 15%. We really saw this increase beginning in the summer and has continued in the fall. And we're remarking on the fact that there is such great need within our community that people are still having to come in very large numbers to be able to get this kind of a backup assistance. And in addition to what Shamithi was saying, I think, too, what we are trying Caritas to do, and this is also a real key issue, is to help people become enrolled in the SNAP program, that Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's the food stamp program. We have what we call SNAP Outreach or Helpings, where we have staff on board with us at Caritas to be able to walk people through that process. It is now a strong emphasis of doing that online. And we provide guidance to people to do that, or we provide a computer for individuals to go on directly and do it. For many of the people, obviously, that are in low income, they probably don't have such ready access to computers, so we are able to do that. So we serve many people right in our facility, but we know from talking with other food pantries that people are taking this issue of not being in the SNAP program and potentially being eligible to the other food pantries, and so there's great need for SNAP enrollment throughout the community. And I haven't seen the latest figures, but we project that only about 60%, I think, of the eligible population in our community for SNAP are currently receiving it. So there's a great need, a great gap for that particular program with right here in this McLennan County area.
Can you explain exactly what an eligible citizen would get from SNAP benefits?
It sort of depends on their other resources and their incomes, but they essentially get what looks like a little credit card, or it's a little gift card that they can use at businesses, grocery stores, whatever, that accept SNAP dollars. And they can take that, get food items that they need, and can that sort of deducts from their card. And they have a certain amount that they can utilize up to each month. And, again, it depends upon other resources. It could be as little as $10 or $15.
Yeah.
And then it could go up to several $100s. And it'll depend upon resources, but also size of the family and other factors. And, Shamitha, you may know some more information about that as well. So, but still, there's a limitation on what SNAP benefits can be for a particular family.
Mm-hmm. You're mentioning that you've seen this increase this year versus 2013. Do you have any way to characterize that? Any explanation for why it's been on
the
rise?
Yes, we try to consider what factors are going on. And we at Caritas, and this may not be the case in other food pantries, we have seen some more homeless folks coming through. We've seen individuals who are working, but they work at very, very reduced wage types of jobs. It's not enough to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And so they are placed in the position where they have to go out and look for other sources of assistance, and they do it on a regular basis. Or we've talked with people who may have come to Waco hoping to get a job, and maybe things didn't pan out, and so now they don't have full resources to be able to get into a stable situation. And again, we see a lot of older people who are coming to Caritas who are on very, very fixed, limited income. Many of them are ill, and they don't really have much alternative in terms of being able to get resources. And so I think it's kind of a combination of factors that we are experiencing, at least the individuals who are coming to Caritas that we're seeing.
So what you're saying kind of gets back to what Shamithi was saying, that, I mean, a lot of the people who are coming into Caritas and a lot of people who are, you know, so-called food insecure are people who, you know, they might be bringing in an income.
Absolutely.
And they're still looking to put food on the table, and their income isn't necessarily covering, you know, the 100% of a month's food on the table.
That's right.
I want to talk a little bit about food deserts in Waco. It's something I've looked into a bunch. You know, this past year, I think we've lost the last three remaining grocery stores that were actually within Central Waco, and they've kind of moved out to the outskirts of town. I guess when once grocery stores leave, or they move to areas out there, where do people end up going to turn for food?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that does impact people that have relied upon neighborhood grocery stores. There's already limitations, as you commented, about many of the much of the availability of food from community areas. A lot of times people have to rely upon convenience stores, mm-hmm. which do not provide either quality type of food, or the expensive items that are sold through those stores really create additional problems. So I think what probably happens is a lot of people come to emergency food assistance programs, the food pantries, where they can. We have a lot of instances where people, if they don't have transportation, that they may have typically walked to the grocery store, have gotten relatives to bring them in, or they paid people to bring them to Caritas, or they ride public transportation. So I'm sure we're seeing more of that kind of a situation. But I know that there are some efforts underway to try to respond a little bit to that. I know the World Hunger Relief Farm is going to be putting out what they call the veggie van. That's going to be going to some of the food desert areas, probably starting at the first of the year, that hopefully will make fresh produce a little bit more available. But I think there's definitely some deficits in terms of the accessibility of people in those communities.
I mean, I guess what I'm curious about is, does that lead to more people kind of going for the French fry sandwich? or, you know, turning to convenience stores when there aren't grocery stores around, or within walking distance.
So. Or maybe eating chips and soda, whatever, whatever is available in the convenience store.
Yeah.
I would say because we already know the transportation barriers are an issue. And so when your grocery store moves even farther away, that creates even more of a barrier. And so if I'm hitching a ride or paying someone to take me, or if I'm walking, well, how many bags of food can I walk with, or can I get on the bus?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be even more compounded for homebound seniors or people who have disabilities. So it's difficulties on top of difficulties with folks who are already limited.
Yeah, we talked about some of the solutions that are getting implemented in Waco. One of them, the veggie van. Another. Food pantries like Caritas. Can you kind of give me the scope? What's the scope of the community of people trying to address this problem in Waco?
I think it's big.
Yeah,
I think it's big, and I think we're seeing more efforts coming together now to try to address it. The McLennan County Hunger Coalition has, for years, been very concerned about trying to educate the community about the extent of the problem of hunger in our community. They've worked to try to be advocates for those who are hungry. They have identified specific steps for trying to address, in a broad sense, the whole issue of food insecurity. One of the current things that are really focusing up on now is greater coordination and communication among the various food pantries. There are a lot of food pantries. Some of them are small. Some of them are larger, like Caritas and Shepherd's Heart. And each of them have a very significant purpose that they're trying to carry out. The volume of people that they see varies because of the limited resources or the days that they may be open. But if there's greater communication and coordination, at least we can kind of work together on trying to address common problems. And I think, as I mentioned a while ago, SNAP is a real concern to try to do a better job of getting people enrolled into that program. We're concerned about issues of language barriers because there is a very large number of our community that are Spanish-speaking. And so when we have problems of communicating adequately in food pantries, that is an issue that needs to be overcome. But I think there's great dialogue taking place right now, and even efforts to collect data about the individuals who are coming to the food pantries and understand more about the dynamics that they're facing, to try to come up with maybe a better overall approach to how we can address the issue in sort of a macro perspective. So I think it's definitely probably better than it's ever been, and it's moving in an improved way, I think, for the future.
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of energy. But I would say that this issue is not just a nonprofit issue. I think we all have a role to play in alleviating food insecurity. So it takes those education centers like the school district and the colleges and universities, as well as the business sector and the faith community. They're so integral as well. Folks who handle transportation services, the city, it's going to take all of us, because all of these systems impact families. And we need to have a coordinated effort if we want to see lasting change. So it's great that we have monthly meetings, and folks are coordinating more efforts. But, we really all have to be involved if we want it to be impactful for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I know one way that the Texas Hunger Initiative does a lot of work was with the school breakfast program, school lunch program. And there also seems to be a lot of data that gets collected out of that.
So much data, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What kind of successes have you seen with Texas Hunger Initiative and school breakfast?
Well, so in Waco ISD, they offer universal breakfast. So that means that any student, regardless of income, can get breakfast. And we know that that has a positive impact when kids don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to pay for breakfast. In other parts of Texas, because we have 12 offices across the state, we're seeing schools start the breakfast in the classroom, which is alternative breakfast model. And what that means is, rather than having the traditional breakfast where kids come before the bell and they eat in like a congregate style in the cafeteria, a breakfast in the classroom, students eat after the bell. They eat in their classrooms, and the cafeteria workers bring the food to the class, and then they're eating in the classroom with their teacher and their classmates. And that has a positive impact because we know a lot of kids miss breakfast just because they don't get to school on time for one reason or the other, especially if they have these transportation barriers that we've been talking about. So all kinds of creative strategies to see if we can put a dent in food insecurity or at least increase access to nutritious food. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the ways.
Yeah. We've heard a bit about, you know, the achievement gap, dealing with poverty. But can you talk a little bit about, I mean, is there such thing as a nutrition gap, you know, especially with kids going to school, kids who come to school hungry? Are they learning as well as kids with full stomachs when they get to school?
Well, so if you talk to teachers, they would say they definitely see food insecurity in the classroom. And there have actually been a lot of studies done with teachers, and they've written narratives that are really interesting to read. But what they talk about is how being hungry affects how the kid learns in class. So that student may be irritable or the stomach is hurting. Like, it's very hard to concentrate in class when you haven't eaten since the previous night, and this could be because they're missing breakfast or maybe because they just didn't have food for dinner. But our kids who may even have behavioral issues, and you're thinking, oh, okay, this kid is just, you know, getting in trouble, but it's not necessarily because they're just trying to be a bad kid or anything like that. It's because they're hungry. Mm-hmm. And so we've definitely seen that. And then you have these teachers who feel so compelled that they're actually spending money on a weekly or monthly basis to supplement the kids' breakfast and lunch, and so you have teachers who have granola bars and fruits mm-hmm. in the classroom. And the statistic for this year was roughly teachers are spending about $76 of their personal income a month just to give their students some snacks to get them through the day. So we know that it's having an impact on the classroom because this is coming straight from the teachers' mouths.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more about those transportation issues as they relate to hunger. One thing that I know Waco and their comprehensive plan is looking into is changing the way the bus route works. I looked into, you know, what it takes to ride the bus to the grocery store in Waco, and you know, it takes a while and it's really hard, you know, when you got tons of groceries with you. Mm-hmm. What's it take to kind of use public transportation to get groceries in Waco?
So the question is, what does it take to use public transportation to get groceries? and so you already alluded to some of these challenges if you have a few bags. But bags aside, what if you have two or three kids, you know, trying to get on the bus with them? If you have a shop with kids, my goodness. So I have a nephew who touches everything, so I'm just having a flashback. But I think, yeah, there's that difficulty of having an entire family with you while you're on the bus trying to get groceries, and there are limits to how many bags you can bring on the bus, so you may not do your monthly shopping, so this may be something you have to do every week since you're only able to take so much onto the bus. And that's not to, you know, besmirch the name of the transportation services. They're doing good work, and we appreciate the fact that they're open to enhancing public transportation. We're just saying from what we hear from families is that it's still a challenge and the time it takes. So if you're a person who's you're living comfortably, you have some extra time on your hands that other people don't have. Maybe you have a wash and dry in your household, and so you're washing clothes and then you can go pay bills or you can read to your kids. When you're someone who has limited resources and you have to get on the bus to go wash clothes, right, or you have to catch a ride to even go wash clothes or go to the grocery store, you're losing time as well. So it's not just a financial issue, it's not just a food issue, but it's just the time. You know, time is valuable as well. And all the time folks are losing just being back and forth on the bus or trying to catch a ride or waiting for a ride. And, you know, and I'm office at Caritas, so we see a lot of folks, they get their food and they're still waiting outside, you know, an hour or so later because they're waiting for a ride as well. Or they may have to leave food behind.
Yes, that's correct.
And I know mm-hmm. that's something Buddy can speak to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, not only is it just the transportation time, but it's the walking to the bus stop time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you said, the waiting time. And if you have perishable foods in the summer, I mean, there's some problems with loss along those lines as well. So if you don't have a way to go directly to the grocery store, it is a tough thing. There's no question about it. And I think if any of us considered typically the amount of groceries that we may own our own purchase, and if we thought about having to take those onto the bus or walk several blocks with your loads of groceries, I mean, I think we'd all feel very, very daunted by that. So it's a real challenging situation, and I think it's a real concern that we all have, especially for, as you comment, the clients that we have at Caritas, because as you've noted, there's limitations on how much you can carry onto the bus. And we try to give, on average, about 70 pounds of food to a family that's coming through, and that's several bags, plastic mm-hmm. bags, and for somebody that may be physically limited, it's maybe not something that you can carry onto the bus the first time, and so you don't have an option to go back off the bus and get more and come back on. They're trying to keep a schedule, mm-hmm. so it makes it very, very tough, and we're conscious of that. Don't have the solutions for it, yeah. but we know that it's definitely a significant issue for many people.
Mm-hmm. And how much money does it take to kind of supply a household with an adequate food supply for a month?
I think that would depend a lot upon the size of the family. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've seen a specific figure that relates to that. I know that, as I mentioned a while ago, we try to provide about 70, on the average, about 70 pounds of food for a family of at least 3 to 4. And we know that that's only designed to last a few days. I mean, and this is probably the case with any of the local food pantries, none of the food, the amount of food that you receive at a food pantry in Waco is going to last you more than just a few days. It's not really intended to. It's supplemental or it's emergency food. Mm-hmm. So we know that when we give assistance to people, it's going to only go for a few days. That's why when we're at Caritas, try to provide information to individuals about other food pantries, where they are in the community, their hours of operation, how to contact them. That's why we try to provide information about the SNAP program, so that if people have ongoing needs for food, then they have other options that they can fall back upon. Mm-hmm. I think the ultimate goal is to obviously try to get people in a position where they are less reliant upon mm-hmm. those kind of assistance programs, but I think we're ways off. And I don't know, I haven't really seen a figure yeah. that shows how much maybe a family would need.
Well, I think you're right, Buddy, in saying that a lot of it depends on the composition of the mm-hmm. family. So mm-hmm. if you have, you know, depending on how many kids you have, mm-hmm. You know, and some folks have combined households.
Right.
So you can have, mm-hmm. you know, 8, 9, 10 people living in one mm-hmm. household. You can have athletes in the household. So kids who eat, my goodness, they eat a lot, especially when they're athletes and they need their nutrition. But what we hear a lot from families, even who have SNAP and they may be getting a few hundred dollars, is that it's hard to make that stretch for the whole month. So I think it depends too. Are we only going to get things that are 99 cents? Are we stocking up on ramen noodles? Are we stocking up on the white breads and these really carb rich things that are very inexpensive? Are we trying to get, you know, food that's a little bit more expensive or can be, the more nutritious food? So I think it just depends on how a family stretches their dollars. Mm. If they're able to.
That's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a real challenge. And they're trying to make those dollars stretch while they're paying their bills on extremely limited income. Like we commented a while ago, people that are working, not having enough money to cover everything, they have to make the choice. Well, mm-hmm. do I get the food or do I keep the electricity on or do I buy gas for the car? And those are very difficult choices to make. And sometimes you just can't make them all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it seems like a lot of these issues with food insecurity, I mean, they're addressing this symptom of poverty. And so it seems like the original issue is poverty in itself, or underemployment, I guess, mm-hmm. in Waco. One thing that we've been talking about is from Waco's Upjohn study from last year, that 40% of households in Waco make less than $25,000 a year. You know, what do you guys see as some of the hopes in trying to address that issue and trying to kind of attack or reduce poverty and unemployment in the city? I mean, that's a huge question, but I mean, do you see any kind of initiatives that you see hope in and kind of turning the city around?
Well, I'll tell you what we've been doing at Caritas. That's a brand new program that we just started this year, and I'm sure other organizations are doing something like this, but it's a program we call case management. Historically, Caritas has provided primarily the direct assistance with food or utility help or clothing help, but we've begun a program where we try to work more intensely with families, that come in and try to understand what are the underlying causes of the problems that create the need for people to come back on a regular basis. And we have begun to work with these folks, with these families, and identified specific steps that can be taken by the family to really move out of poverty, at least become more self-sufficient. And this has led us to be able to place several of our clients into educational programs like MCC, get people into GED programs, find employment for them, and to provide along the way some assistance that have been really barriers for people to make headway. For example, in order to get into an educational program, there perhaps maybe some preliminary testing that costs certain amounts of money, or they have to have certain attire in order to participate in an internship that costs a certain amount of money. And those costs have precluded their ability in the past to be able to move forward. And so through this program, through our direct assistance to these people, we're now being able to get people into some of these training programs, and we're starting to see positive outcomes, people getting jobs now. And when I'm talking about case management Caritas, it's very small. We want to, in the future, to be seeing how we can expand it. But it's the one-on-one. It's working directly with people to overcome individual barriers that have in the past prevented them from being able to make headway. And it's because they haven't had the disposable income at all to be able to pay for this or that, to get into the educational program and to get past some of these other problems that may have been just insurmountable prior to this particular intervention. So case management is certainly one way, but it's like a one-on-one approach. It's not like macro in the sense of impacting a lot of people at once, but it's certainly enabling us to be able to see differences in people's lives individually.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, folks have been doing this type of work for a lot longer than I have, and a lot smarter than I am, and no one still has cracked that nut, really. But it seems like what makes the most sense to me is that folks are struggling with poverty because they don't have enough financial resources. I mean, that's it. It's like, how do we put more money into families? And so, and I don't have the silver bullet for that. But it's, if we can't increase wages, or if we can't give people just well-compensated jobs, well, maybe we can offset some of the other costs of living. So childcare is so expensive. Maybe we can offer low, affordable childcare, or free childcare, or after-school programs that that are low-cost or free as well. Maybe we can do more with transportation, which is, you know, what's been done now. But also, folks who are struggling, and it's not just low-income people, or it's folks who are middle class too. Suburban poverty is growing at an alarming rate as well. So that you have a lot of folks who are one financial crisis or one mishap away from being in poverty themselves, whether they live, you know, in public housing or the suburbs. So if we're figuring out from them, what's preventing you from excelling or from having that cushion? Because a lot of folks don't. And I can tell you that one big thing in Waco is payday lending. So, I mean, that if we have folks who are already in bad situations, they're going to get these short-term loans that have really high interest rates, and it's exacerbating their circumstances. So I think something positive, because I've been gloomy for a little while, so let me do a positive note. What's positive about that is that you have now nonprofits and business leaders and faith leaders who are coming together to say, What can we do about payday and title lending in our community? We see it's taking a lot of resources out. It's sending a lot of folks to the pantries. And so they're trying to get a grip on that and see how we can collaborate on that. So that's a positive direction, I think.
Right. Yeah, and I think the Prosper Waco that's going to be emerging probably at the first of the year is going to be looking at a very large-scale way of approaching it, looking at the educational factors, the health factors, and probably the financial factors that you're commenting about, and addressing it from a very, very wide community perspective on things. I think that that's probably going to have a big impact as well as we move forward.
I'm here with Shamithia Webb, the Waco Regional Director of the Texas Hunger Initiative, and Buddy Edwards, the Executive Director of Caritas of Waco. We've been talking about hunger and food insecurity in Waco. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This interview is part of KWBU News' month-long series about poverty in Waco. You can find a recording of this program and our previous conversation with Mayor Malcolm Duncan and Virginia Dupuy, as well as a discussion with Waco ISD leaders at kwbu.org.